Good morning. Today's daf is Baba Kama, daf Samach Aleph. First of all, today's shiur is sponsored by Josh and Michelle Prero, the Schos Refuah Shleima for Miriam Bas Shifra Yenta. We thank the Preros very much for the sponsorship, and we hope today's learning is a schos for the Refuah Shleima of Miriam Bas Shifra Yenta, as well as all the other cholim and cholos in Klal Yisrael. So today we are going to pick up from the bottom of Samach Amabes, and today's shiur will be abbreviated due to the time constraints. And I should note for the record, for those who happen to be listening online, again, it's Alicia Graf covering for Rabbi Leibowitz, who is traveling all week. So you have to deal with me through Friday, and then Rabbi Leibowitz is back again, giving this year live on Shabbos and on online again, God willing, starting next Sunday morning. So anyway, we left off, or Rabbi Leibowitz left off yesterday, Samach Amabes, towards the bottom of the Amud, in the middle of this conversation, or in the middle of the discussion about the nature of the question that David HaMelech had. So we saw some sukkim from Shmuel, where it appeared that David HaMelech, it sounded like he was trying to draw water, but the Gemara took it for granted that he really had a halachic shaila. And so the rabbi said yesterday there were going to be three explanations as to what the halacha was that David HaMelech was asking. We covered the first two yesterday. Today we're going to cover the third. And then we're going to hit a series of Mishnayos, beginning on Samach Aleph Amud Aleph, carrying on to Samach Beis Amud Beis. We'll see how far we get, probably only to the middle of the Amud on Amud Beis, dealing again with Nizke Eish, and dealing with what sort of Shmira is considered to be a proper Shmira for Nizke Eish, and what circumstances are you chayiv if your Eish goes from your property to somebody else's property, and what circumstances might you be putter, what sort of barriers are sufficient in preventing Eish from traveling. So we'll see all that, God willing, in today's shiur. So we will pick up today from 2, 4, 6... Eight lines up from the bottom of the Amud. Fourth word on the line is Virabanan. So yesterday we had two different interpretations of what exactly of the question that David was asking of the basin. So the first interpretation was he wanted to know what is the halacha by Taman. He was fighting the Plishtim. He was burning fields. And there may have been kalim in the middle, hidden in the fields. And he was asking, what's the halacha with respect to Taman and Eish? If he burns a field and there happened to be kalim there that are hidden there, is he going to be chai for those kalim or not? The second interpretation was, ma'ala hatzel atzmo b'mamon chaveiro. Are you allowed to save yourself with your friend's money? So, according to this interpretation, the situation was that there were plishtim soldiers that were hidden in fields belonging to other Jewish people. David wanted to burn down the fields in order to smoke out the soldiers, in order to get the soldiers out of there. And the question was he allowed to save himself? Was he allowed, for the purpose of saving himself in the army, was he allowed to burn down a field belonging to somebody else? So now we're going to pick up with the third interpretation, Rabbanan v'sema Rabba Bar Mari Amru, and the Rabbanan say that Gedishim Disorin Di Yisrael Havu, that there were piles of barley that belonged to Jewish people, v'gdishin da'adoshin deplishtim, and there were piles of lentils belonging to plishtim. V'kamibaylu ma litol gdishin shel sorin di Yisrael litin lefnei behemto amanas l'shalim gdishin shel adoshim deplishtim. And the question was he allowed to take the gdishin shel siorim? Was he allowed to take the barley belonging to the Jews to feed his animals in order to then replace the barley of the Jews that he would have taken with the lentils of the Plishtim? So in other words, is he allowed to cause a temporary loss to the Jewish people when he's taking their grain if he's going to replace it ultimately with the grain belonging to the Plishtim? The Mefarshim point out that, again, we're going to see a machlokas. We alluded to this actually probably about a month or so ago. There's going to be a machlokas later on in the Masechta, in about 40 blot, whether Gezel Akum is mutter or it's going to be usser. So according to the Mandi Amar, who says that Gezel Akum is going to be usser, so in that case, what's the question? In other words, the assumption of the question is that you're not allowed to steal from Jewish people, but if you steal then from the goy to replace the value of what you stole from the Jewish person, then it might be mutter, right? So if Gezel Akum, however, is usser, how would this have been allowed? If you're not allowed to steal from the Jewish person, you're not allowed to steal from the goy to pay back to the Jewish person, so how would this work? So the Mefarshim explained that Gezel Akum is being mutter or usser is obviously only in regular situations. This is dealing with a situation of war. Remember, the Jewish people were at war with the Plishtim, and therefore the Gdishim Shel Adoshin of the Plishtim had the status not of something that was owned by the Plishtim, but it had the status of spoils of war. Spoils of war you're obviously allowed to take, and therefore the question was, am I allowed to temporarily deprive a Jewish person of his property if I'm going to repay the Jewish person with spoils of war? So Shalchulei, so the Sanhedrin sent back to David HaMelech, Chavol Yashiv Rasha Gzele Shalem, that the Rasha returns a pledge and pays the and pays back the Gzela. So what does this mean? So Afal Pisha Gzela Mishalem Rushahu. So we see that even though he's going to return the Gzela, he's still called a Rusha. So you're asking me, am I allowed to steal from a Jewish person Almanas that I'm going to pay them back with the Adoshim belonging to the Plishtim? And we see from here that even though the person is ultimately going to pay the person back, he's still considered to be a Rusha. So therefore, it's inappropriate. Aval ata melech ata, but you're a king. Umelech paretz lasos lo derech vein mochem biyado, and a king can do whatever he wants. He has the right of way. He has eminent domain, and nobody can make a macha. The Rush just asks that this whole pasuk of the Rasha returning a pledge and returning a stolen item appears to be that he's considered to be a Rasha because even though he intends on doing it, he doesn't necessarily have access to the stolen item to return now. In other words, if he's replacing the item then and there, the Rasha is troubled. Why is he considered a Rasha? And David HaMelech over here, in fact, actually had the Adoshim of the Plishtim in hand, ready to swap out the Seorim of the Jewish people. It was just that Seorim was Machal Behema, Adoshim wasn't Machal Behema. So the Rasha is bothered why exactly this was analogous. But nonetheless, here we have the third opinion as to what David HaMelech was asking. Am I allowed to steal from a Jewish person if I repay the theft with something that I take from a guy? And the Sanhedrin said, really, we're not happy with somebody who does this, but you're a king, and so all bets are off. So says the Gemara, Bishlam Alamandi Amar Lach Lufe, I understand, according to this Mandi Amar, who says that the whole kasha was, am I allowed to switch out the Sa'orin for the Adoshim of the Plishtim? Hainu Dechsev Chad Kra. That's why one of the psukim say over there, Fatisham Chelkas Hasada Malaya Adashim. That's why one of the psukim what refers to a Sada Malaya Adashim, Uksiv Chadkra Fati Chelkas Hasada Malaya Sa'orin. And the other pasuk talks about a field of barley, because that was Dafka the question. That was the question, can I take from the barley in order to repay with the Adashim? But according to the Mandiyamar, who says that the whole kasha was, is he allowed to burn down the field in order to smoke out and in order to get rid of the Plishtim soldiers who are hiding in the field? My boyle lahani trei kroy. So why do you need these two psukim? Why do you need one pasuk that tells me about a field of Sa'orim, one pasuk that tells me about a field of Adashim? I should know, if the halacha is that I'm allowed to burn down a field in order to get the soldiers out of there, then I should be able to burn down that field, whether it's a field full of lentils or whether it's a field full of barley. And if I'm not allowed to burn down the field, then I'm not going to be allowed to burn down the field no matter what's in the field. So what do I need these two psukim? So Amar Lecha, Davinami Gdishim Da Adashim Di Yisrael, Davinami Gdishim Da Adashim Di Yisrael, Davi Mimtru Bu Plishtim. Well, because, says the Pasuk, because there were Plishtim soldiers in both of these types of fields. There were Plishtim soldiers, just historically, there were Plishtim soldiers in the fields of barley, and there were Plishtim soldiers in the fields of lentils, and that's why the psukim talk about burning down the field with respect to these two types of fields. Not necessarily that the halacha would have been different, but that practically, historically speaking, factually, that's what was. Says the Gemara, Savishlam al-Mandi Amar Lamikli, I understand according to the Mandi Amar, who says that the kasha was, is he allowed to burn down the field? That's why That's why the pasuk talks about standing in the middle of the field, and it uses the lashon of hatsala, because remember that whole second question was about mahu lahatzil atzmo b'mamon chaveiro, and that's why the pasuk talks about the word hatsala vayatzilea. El man yamar leachlufe, but according to the man yamar, who says that this had nothing to do with saving lives, this had nothing to do with saving people. It had to do simply with, is he allowed to take animal food that belongs to Jewish people and replace the animal food with other types of grain that's not fit for animals? My vayatzilea. What's the story with Vayatzilea? What does it mean that he saved it? Who did he save? We're not talking about saving people. So the answer is Lo Shavak Leilachlufe. It's not that he saved the people. He saved the produce. In other words, that technically speaking, you're not allowed to steal from the barley and repay with lentils. The Vayatzilea is going on the produce, that he saved David from stealing the produce. So Bishlam Hani Tarti, I understand these two. Hani Dixiv Trey Kroy. That's why there are two psukim. Elamandi Amar Tomen Ba'esh Kami Boyle Ma'i Boyle Kroy. But according to the Man Yamar, who says that the whole kasha was Taman Ba'esh, so why do I need one pasuk that talks about the Sa'orim and one pasuk that talks about the Adashim? The halacha by Taman Ba'esh is we don't care what type of field the thing was hidden in, and furthermore, from a factual perspective, it doesn't really make a difference what sort of field this was. Why do I need two psukim here? So says the Gemara. So Amar lecha taman v'chada mehanach. Well, it's because he actually had two questions. One question was about taman ba'esh. Am I chayav or am I potter for things that are hidden in the field if I burn the field down? And the second question was either ma'al lahatzel asma b'mama chaveiro or ma'al lahachlif, or am I allowed to be machlif the sorim shela the gdish shel sorin for the gdish shel adashim. So says the Gemara, Bishlam al-Aman Diyamar Hane Tarti. I understand, according to the Aman Diyamar, it says it was these two things, Hane Dixiv Lova David Lishtosam, that David didn't want to drink from the water. Again, metaphorically, we saw yesterday that the Pasuk was describing the situation as if David was thirsty. We had said that Ein Mayim El Torah, that he wasn't thirsty literally, rather he was thirsting for the halacha. So he got the halacha, and he didn't want to drink from the water. Now, why didn't he want to drink from the water? So he said, "So Amar Akiva Dika Yisura Lo Nichali, because it's Asur, I don't want to do it." Because remember, both according to the Man D'Yomar, who said that the question was Ma Lahatzel Asma B'Mamon Shel Chaveiro, and according to the Man D'Yomar, who said Ma'u L'Chlufe, the Sanhedrin sent back to David HaMelech, really, we don't like these things. But you're a king, and what can we do? Because a king has a right of eminent domain, and you're allowed to do whatever you want anyway. So we may as well tell you that you could do it. But he saw that Sanhedrin said that really, Meikar Adin, it was usher to do this, and that's why V'lo'ava David Lishtosam, that's why David didn't want to drink. In other words, David did not want to avail himself of the halacha that Sanhedrin had paskened for him, because he didn't want to do what was usur, even though he was a melech. He was going lifnim mishuras adin. But according to the Mandiyamar, it says that he was simply asking a question of what the halacha is by taman ba'esh. Is he chayiv or is he potter? Michti gemaru deshalchalei. What does it mean? He didn't want to listen to them. He asked the Sanhedrin a question, and they answered him with a gemara. I mean, so he was asking, is the halacha like? I mean, obviously this was before the time of the gemara, but he was asking, is the halacha going to be ultimately designated? Is it going to be determined rather like Rav Yehuda, or is it going to be determined like the Rabbanan? So they answered him, it's going to be either like Rav Yehuda or the Rabbanan. They didn't give him a whole story about, it's really Yosser, but you're a king, so you're allowed to do whatever you want. Why didn't he want to listen to them in that case? So what does it mean? So the Shalchalei Milo Avadavad Lishtosam, so what does that mean? So back in the Gemara, Delo Amina Mishmayu, that he didn't say it in their name. Why? Because Amar Kach Mekublani Mi Beis Dino Shel Shmuel Ramasi, he said, this is what I'm a couple from the basin of Shmuel Ramasi, Kala Moser Atzmo Lamos Al Divrei Torah Ein Omrim Dvar Halacha Mishmo, that anybody who subjects himself to death or grave danger in order to learn Torah, we don't say any Dvar Halacha in their name. And here David had dispatched people to the Sanhedrin. It was a time of war, so traveling was very, very treacherous. It was very dangerous. Those people went to the Sanhedrin. They asked the Kasha. They brought back the word from the Sanhedrin. But because those people because those people sacrificed their lives and they risked their lives to go ask the question, David did not want to bring down this halacha in their name. The Marsha explains that it's improper to put yourself in a makom sakana, in a makom of grave danger. And even though we say that shluchei mitzvah ain't a nizakin, and these people who went to ask the Sanhedrin the kasha were shluchei mitzvah because David wanted to know the halacha, so he was sending them to the Sanhedrin for a psak, l'chora they should have been shluchei mitzvah. We know that shluchei mitzvah ain't a nizakin. So in that case, why is David so bothered that they put themselves in makom sakana? Short should come out from the beginning that they were never in a sakana because they're shluchei mitzvah. They would never be harmed. So the Marsha explains that we know that the halacha is that where shchiach hezeka it's shani, that where shchiach hezeka, where the hezek is shchiach, then it's different, and then shluchei mitzvah are susceptible to being injured, are susceptible to being harmed, even though they are shluchei mitzvah, and therefore we say, and so what's the connection to repeating something in somebody's name? So the Marsha then explains that we know the famous Maimer Chazal, Kola Omer Davar B'Shem Omro, Mevi Gula Liolam, anybody who says something in the name of the person who said it brings Geula. So if we're dealing with Mevi Gula, we don't want to bring Geula on account of people who acted improperly. And if by putting yourself in a makom of grave danger, you're acting improperly because you should not be relying on Shluchim Mitzvah Einin Nizakin, that you've acted improperly, and we don't want to facilitate the geula with people who are not acting properly. That's the way the Marsha explains this. So in any event, says the Gemara a little bit weiter, so Vayase Chosam Lashem, and then he poured them out to Hashem. So Bishlam Lamandi Amarhani Tarti Mishum David Lashem Shemayim. So I understand, according to the Mandi Amar, who says that he was asking Ma'al Lahatzal Asma Mishal Chaveiro, or Ma'al Lahachlif, that's why it said that he got the answer, and then he poured out the answer. What does it mean he poured out the answer? Metaphorically, he did not listen to it. In other words, even though they paskined, you, David, are allowed to do this because you're the king, David rejected that because what they were really telling him is, it's usser, but you're allowed to do it because you're the king. So he abided by the it's usser. He did not avail himself of the special dispensation that is usually permitted for a king. So v'yasechosom l'Hashem, so bishlam l'mandir marim t'arati mishom David l'shem shemayim, l'mandir marim t'amun ba'esh, ma v'yasechosom l'Hashem. What does it mean, v'yasechosom l'Hashem? What does it mean he poured them out? In other words, it wasn't ever a situation where they said, oh, it's usher, but you're allowed to do it because you're the king. They either answered him, it's mutter, or it's usher. Says the Gemara, damrina mishmei de Gemara. What does it mean that he poured it out? It means, remember, like we just said a minute ago, he rejected the notion that he would transmit this halacha b'shem the people who actually brought the halacha back to him. So what does it mean he poured it out? Not that he didn't listen to the halacha. He did listen to the halacha. However, he just said it mishmei de Gemara. He just said as if it was the halacha of the rabbim as opposed to a halacha attributed to these specific people who brought the halacha back to David HaMelech. Okay, so that concludes the story of David HaMelech, the three things potentially that he was asking about. Says the Gemara, now Vayter, much more grounded halachos in terms of Nizkei Eish. So says the Gemara, Avra Geder Shugavoa Dalad Amos, Oderech HaRabim. Let's say you light a fire in your property. So very important to remember that over here we're talking about somebody who lit a fire in his property, not somebody who goes to somebody else's property and lights a fire. Because if you go to somebody else's property and you light a fire, that is a problem. If, however, you light a fire in your property, under certain circumstances, you should assume that it's going to remain localized. Therefore, if it crosses a fence of greater than 4 amos, or if it crosses a derech harabim, and what's a derech harabim? Derech harabim, says Rashi, is a reshus harabim midaraisa, which is a road 16 amos wide, onor, or let's say it crosses a river, then you're going to be putter. Why? Because all these barriers should have been sufficient in preventing the spread of the fire. So if you lit a fire in a manner that was not negligent, and the fire nevertheless wound up traversing your property, going into somebody else's field, you're not going to be chai for that. Says the Gemara, Aiva Tanya Avra Geder Shu Gavoa Arba Amos Chayiv. We have another braisa that says if it crosses a geder that's 4 amos high, then you're going to be chayiv. In the Mishnah, you said that is potter. Samra Papa Tana Didan Kachasha Milmala Lamata. Our Tana is starting from the perspective of an even higher wall and even higher mechitza, and is counting from the higher numbers to the lower numbers. So what does that mean? Sheish amos putter. If it crosses a barrier 6 amos high, you're going to be putter. Chamesh amos putter. If it crosses a barrier even 5 amos high, you're going to be putter. Ad arba amas potter, all the way down until it's four amas. If the barrier is at least four amas, then it's going to be potter. And over here is ad va ad bechlal. That four amas is included in the ptur. If the barrier is four amos or greater, or four amos or taller, then you're going to be potter. Tana bra, that other tana is talking about milmata lamala. He's talking about from a lower mechitza up to four amos kachashim. Shtei amos chayev. Shalosh amos chayev. Ad arba amos chayev. Until four amos you're chayev, but up here it's ad velo ad bechlal. So up to three amos and a fraction below four, that you're going to be chayev. Once you hit four amos and above, then you're going to be potter. So that's how we reconcile the stira. Sama rava dalan amos shamru de potter afilu b'stei kotzim. That the four amos that we said that you're potter if the barrier is four amos high, is even by y'stei kotzim. And a field of thorns, Rashi says, what's noteworthy about a field of thorns? That thorns are very flammable. And even though the thorns are very flammable, still a mechitza of four amos is going to be sufficient. So says the Gemara, a little clarification, Samra Papa Misfas Kotzim Ulamala Dalad Amos, that the barrier, the four amma wall, has to be measured four amas from the top of the thorns. In other words, let's say there's the ground and there's a pile of thorns on the ground. So if thorns we know are very flammable, and we said that the barrier needs to be four amas high in order to actually prevent the spread of the fire, then the four amma barrier has to be measured from the top of the thorns up to the top of the barrier. There's got to be that four amos to create the separation. But if there's only four amas from the floor, from the ground to the top of the barrier, but half that space is taken up with kotzim, which are very flammable, then that's not going to be a sufficient barrier. Okay, so says the Gemara Vayter, Sama Rav. Rav says a further qualification, Lo shanu ela bekolachas, and we're only talking about a fire that is, you know, sort of like a high fire that spreads high up from the ground, aval b'nechfefes, but by a fire that's nechfefes, we'll see what that means in a second, afilu ad mea ama, even a barrier of up to mea ama is going to be insufficient. What's nechfefes? So if you look in Rashi, aval nechfefes, so about halfway down, he says, Sharuach mata osav a kopal itzdadinu mafzik hashaleves v'dolgin, lashamori. So Rashi quotes his Rebbe, who says that nechfefes is basically a wind-blown fire. So it would turn out that kolachas is a fire that's sort of straight, that's static, and nechfefes is one that's very wild, it's very untamed, it's very wind-blown. Rashi's different interpretation is, lishachrina nechfefes esh nemucha holeches, v'nechreses ba'asavim. It's a low fire that creeps across the ground. Uv'ksamim shal gabi akarka hilkach afilu avra derech rishos harabim rachav ma'od chayev. Therefore, even if it crosses a derech in rishos harabim that's even 100 amas wide, it's going to be putter. So you'll note, it's interesting that when Rashi uses the second interpretation, when he gives us the second interpretation, that nechfefes is a fire very low to the ground, he changes the thing that we're talking about. We have been talking in the Gemara about a barrier that's four amas high. But if it's really a fire that's close to the ground, there's no reason that a barrier that's four amas high should be insufficient. What may be insufficient if it's a fire that crawls, that creeps close to the ground, is that Rishus HaRabim, we said that if there's a 16 amma wide road between your Rishus and somebody else's Rishus, that's enough of a barrier to make you putter if your fire crosses it. So Rashi says, now dealing with a fire that works close to the ground, that 16 amma wide road, that width is only sufficient when it's a normal fire that's upright. When it's a fire that's parallel to the ground, that's very close to the ground, even a wider road is going to be insufficient. Shmuel Amar, now back in the Gemara, Shmuel says, Masnisa Minechfefes, that the Mishnah is talking about this wind-blown fire, Aval Bekolachas, but by regular fire, Afilu Kol Shu Potter, even if you have only a very minimal barrier, you are going to be Potter. Tanya Kabose de Rav, we have a Brisa that says like Rav, Amedvar Murim Bekolachas, Aval Benechfefes, Ve'etzim Mitzuyim La, but if it's a crawly fire, if it's a low fire, and Etzim are there, so in other words, there's fuel that's there that's going to fuel the fire, afilu ad mea mil chayev, yichayev, even if the fire traverses a distance of 100 mil. Avra nar o shlulis, sheim rechavin ches amas potter. However, if it passes by a river or a shlulis, we'll see what a shlulis is in a minute, that is even eight amos wide, then you're going to be potter. Derech harabim, we said that if the fire crosses derech harabim, then you're potter. So Mantana, who's the man who says that derech harabim is 16 amos, Amar Rava, Rabbi Elezer, Yidatani, Rabbi Elezer, Omer, Sheish Asur amos, Kederech Rishas Arabim, that the Derech Rishas Arabim is, the Derech Rishas Arabim is 16 amos wide. Oh, Nahar, Saravam or Nahar Mamish. So Rav says that when we say that if it crosses a river, you're going to be potter. Rav says it means actually a river, Mamish a river. Shmuel Amar Arisa Dali. Shmuel says an irrigation canal. So Mandi Amar Nahar Mamish. The Mandi Amar says that you're potter if it crosses a river, and that river means actually a river. Afagavdalekamaya. So that would be the case even if there is no water, because still there is this gap that the fire would have to cross. So Mandi Amar Arisa Dali, and the Mandi Amar says that it means an irrigation ditch. Yisle b'maya in, avalesle b'maya lo. You're only potter if there's actually water in the irrigation ditch. However, if there is no water in the irrigation ditch, then you're going to be potter, because the irrigation ditch is only a ditch. It's not wide enough in and of itself to impede the progress of the fire. And therefore, it's only sufficient to impede the progress if there is water in it. Tanan Hasam, says the Gemara Vayter, Ve'elam Afsikin Lefeya. And these, now totally switching the context, but these are the types of things that are mafsik a field for purposes of peya. We know that the halacha peya is that in every field, the owner of the field has to leave over some produce in the corners of the field for the aniyim. You have to leave peya for each field. The question is, if you have a large expanse of land and there's something dividing, are they considered to be one field for the halacha of peya, or are they considered to be two fields for the halacha of peya? So we say Ve'elam Sikin Lepeya Nachal Vashlulis Vaderecha Yachav Vaderecha Rabim. My Shlulis, what is Shlulis? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Mokam Shemek Shamim Sholim Sham, in irrigation ditch. Rabibi, Amar Rav Yochanan, Amar Amas Hamayim. It's Amas Hamayim Shemachlekas Shol Lagfeah, that basically takes water to the field. So Mandir Amar Mokam Shemek Shamim Sholim Sham, Mandir Amar says that it's basically a ditch where rainwaters collect. Kolshkein Amas Hamayim. Certainly an Amas Hamayim is sufficient enough, it's a sufficient enough division to render the fields two fields. Mandir Amar Amas Hamayim, and the Mandir Amar says that it's Amas Hamayim of a Mokam Shemek Shamim Sholim Sham Lo Mafsiki. However, a Mokam Shemek Shamim, Mokam where Meg Shamim collect, that's not enough of a Hefsik. The Hanu Ba'agne, the Aru Mikri. Those are only called ditches of the land. Those are not called significant barriers that would have the ability to separate one field from the next. Okay, so we have a lot of ground to make up tomorrow. Not entirely our fault. And hopefully we'll be able to go quickly tomorrow. More halachas of Niskei Eish.